Good evening, everyone. It'll be the closing track after this. I want to introduce to you the network team from this conference. They're about to talk about how the network worked or didn't, and I'm sorry to say this will be a little bit shorter track due to Jello's longer track. Everyone, the network team.
All right, thank you. I don't usually perform in public unless I'm drunk and there's a karaoke machine, apparently, because my first public performance was last night, and hopefully this will go a little bit better. I'm Sir Psycho. This is, everybody knows, Dragorn, and we have Doug, who Doug's handled the public terminal cluster, and I coordinated all the network goings on, and everybody knows who Dragorn is and what he does here. So, actually, can I get the laptop on the screen over here? I guess I have to turn it on. Hold on. That work? I guess I should have tested this first. No, that turns it off. I'm sorry.
So whoever owns this laptop, I guess there's a password necessary to get it online. Is that? I don't know your password. I don't want to, like, have to hack into your laptop, man. Set up the network to get wireless on it. Right.
Is that coming up?
Let's try.
We'll be about 15 minutes here. Just get it done.
All right.
Doug's going to put an O, by the way.
What's that?
Go put an O in Doug.
Oh, I didn't realize that. You said that it was your name.
Sorry.
All right. So, I guess we can begin. So, I've done the coordination.
Hold the mic close to your face.
Okay. So, I've done the coordination for the past four conferences now. And the requirements don't typically change, though they do sort of increase. We didn't really have wireless at H2K. We somewhat had wireless during H2K2 and during the Fifth Hope and this conference. I think our wireless has been pretty rock solid. But some of the additional requirements that we've had for this conference was everybody keeps screaming that they wanted more internet bandwidth, and this time we actually pulled through, sort of, and got a 90 megabit connection to the internet. I'll explain why we didn't have 90 megabit connections to the internet, even though we had it. Later on, we're going to go over some of the problems. But high-speed internet access is something that everybody always wants. We needed connectivity between the second floor, which is the main convention space, and the 18th floor, which is where all the speaker space is, for a couple of purposes. Number one, so everybody here could get to the internet. We have... Typically, our internet lines were wired lines, and we can only get the wired lines to the second floor, so that's how we were getting the internet down to the second floor. And also for the audio-video streaming, where some of the people, we had overflow on the second floor, and the AV team handled the streaming. Who's that? Sorry about that.
For the AV team?
Okay. I hear you. Yeah, anyway, I'm not really experienced with this stuff. Anyway, so we had we have AV requirements where we stream the talks and the presentations down to the second floor, and is this going? No, it doesn't. Right. Let's see. We also have other than the wireless we spoke about. Sorry, I'm a little nervous.
We have the public terminals for attendees, and we have the protected subnets where we don't want the general wireless network and whatnot to interfere with speakers using the hard lines wired to the tables up here. We don't want it to interfere with the streaming network, which simulcasts the talks from up here down to the second floor, and the management VLAN, which controls the switches and whatnot on the different floors.
And typically, the entire network is built, constructed, and everything is on a donation effort. So all the switches weren't paid for, the cabling. Actually, this time is the first time we've actually paid for Cat5. At H2K2, we had, Bernie S. brought like six spools of Cat5 cable. This time, actually got no donations, except for a single spool that I brought, and we actually had to run a PTC actually brought two spools, and then we actually ran out, so we had to run over to Home Depot to get some more Cat5 cable. So typically the network is 100% volunteer effort. So
I'm sorry. This laptop guy, could you just like get this thing online, because I'm having issues, and this great showing from the network staff here. Thank you.
All right. Blame me. So, the AV team isn't on here, but they're not really part of the network. I guess they're on the AV side. So, let's see. We have to get the internet up and running. We have somebody named Pyro who we found off of the wiki, and he volunteered to do all the enormous effort of all the negotiation in getting a company called Rainbow Broadband to get us our broadband wireless access.
He's over there. Stand up and wave.
Stand up and wave. And basically, I was very impressed that a company was, really took a strong interest in 2600, and they wanted to showcase their connectivity by giving us the bandwidth at the conference. Rainbow Broadband gave us the actual microwave to our internet provider, who is Net Access Corporation, NAC.net. And not only did they give us the DSL, 6-megabit DSL line, which was basically our fallback in case the Rainbow, the microwave thing didn't work out, but also NAC gave us the IP space and the bandwidth.
Yeah, I got to say that NAC, and especially Alex at NAC, has been instrumental in networking for several of these occasions. He's pretty much been responsible for WAN connectivity wholesale. So a lot of props to NAC and to Alex.
Now, I don't know if anybody from Rainbow is here. Pyro? Okay, they couldn't be here. What's the guy's name from? Right. We had Mark and Alex, another Alex, from Rainbow Broadband, who got us our great pipe. And unfortunately, I have to take the credit in the fact that we couldn't utilize the broadband access because of a bad cable. So I'll explain that a little bit later on. All right, so that's the internet. We spent enough time on that. Routing. Dragon and I set that up. The core of the network was basically, pork chop, Dragon and I. All the cabling was pretty much managed by L. Cruz and Pyro. The PTC was pretty much Doug, Mike, and Mike. And NOC was, basically run and manned by everyone on the table, on the slide. So so now the fun part, the planning. There wasn't a lot of planning because, real lives, and trying to fit in the planning for the conference. Just was very difficult. And when I was free, somebody else wasn't free. And when that person was free, I wasn't free. So it was just it was very difficult to actually coordinate, even at the known times for coordination, which were the 2600 meetings and the Hope meetings, which were the third Fridays at the Citibank Center. So I didn't actually get started in much of the planning until about 2 weeks ago. All the concepts are the same, for the past couple of years. So it wasn't like we were flying into this blind. But if I had more time, I think we could have nailed down a lot of these other problems that we've had. Part of the One of the things we did plan on, which was, was using Linux to do our routing because in the past the routers were BSD-based. At H2K, it was OpenBSD, and then the next two conferences were NetBSD. And why? Because I was heavily involved in it, and I know BSD very fluently, and it was easy for me and the other people who were involved at the time to use NetBSD, to use BSD-based operating systems. But since this conference, it was because of my personal life and everything that was going on, there was a chance that I wasn't going to be as heavily involved in this. So I decided to switch to using Linux because there were more people who knew Linux that were involved in the networking. So, so that's why we decided to use a Linux router. We used Cisco switches and Aruba wireless access points. We did a fiber link between the two and the 18th floors. We had to actually... We measured the distance, and unfortunately, we actually came up short. So I'll explain about that problem in a little bit. And again, we already talked about the NAC DSL and the Rainbow Broadband, and we were going to do some monitoring using Nagios to make sure that certain devices didn't disappear. But we ran out of time, and but we do have some MRTG graphs, which are now completely skewed because of the problems we were having. And the NOC staff just completely fell apart. It was basically just the core people who were involved in the networking basically stayed most of the time during the conference, and we lost track of our volunteers, so we couldn't really have the NOC as well staffed as we wanted to. So overall, I guess the planning could have been a little bit better, but the end result, is that we still had a pretty decent network, one of the better, probably the best network we've had yet, and every conference the network seems to get better. So the way the setup happened, we started at 11 a.m. Thursday, and I don't think we're actually finished setting up the network yet. Let's see. We set up the tables at just about 11 a.m. Then, getting the router set up, making sure everything was functional. Then we decided to run the fiber, and we found that we were about 200 feet short of what we actually needed. So we actually had to move the NOC over to where the fiber ended. And more specifically, we had to use another patch at the end of our fiber coupled with a patch panel coupler that I happened to have from last conference. And we moved the NOC over to next to where the AV room is. So that finished about, 9 p.m. Was it about 9 p.m. that we finished that? We moved the NOC? Yeah, I think it was about 9 p.m.
I think we started moving the NOC around 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Because it was too late to buy more fiber.
Right, exactly. So after we got the fiber actually run, we set up the switches, getting all the VLANs going for, between 2 and 18. Then DragArn began doing the AP setup, getting them deployed, cabled, and on the network. And then once he was done with that, I think you were done about 4 a.m. with that?
Around that.
And at 4 a.m., we started working on the firewall and getting policy routing. And I'll explain in a bit why we needed to do policy routing. This is an example of what we people keep asking, are we using VLANs? Well, yes, we were using VLANs. We have VLANs for each individual specific purpose. Like the trunk to our internet provider was on its own VLAN. Our uplink to the DSL was on its own VLAN, specifically because we have how we were doing our routing. The wired access, if you plugged into an Ethernet jack downstairs, you'd be on a specific VLAN. The PTC guys were on their own VLAN. All the streaming stuff, which we wanted to separate from the rest of the network to protect it, that's on its own VLAN. All of the wireless access was a separate network. Let's see. We had an external VLAN for projects, like somebody wanted to set up, show people how to set up Tor, so we gave him a switch and an Ethernet connection so he could set up his equipment. And the CTF, which I believe didn't happen, was also on this range. The speakers, like the Ethernet jack, that's the Ethernet cable that's running along the side, that gray cable, that's on its own VLAN because we wanted to protect it. And then the VLAN that managed everything was a separate VLAN. So now, for the routing, in the past, this router was pretty sufficient. 450 megahertz with a lot of RAM hasn't been a problem in the past. Again, we used Linux for Slackware Linux is the router with that 2.6.17.6 for the kernel. we had two quad tulip cards that was handling all of the uplinks to the assorted VLANs. We didn't want to use VLAN trunking because that would just been more processing. It was easy to just do straight routing. We used IP tables for the firewall to protect the networks, and again, we used Linux kernel advanced routing for the policy routing. I believe. But should I come back to that? Should we explain the policy routing first?
Sure, we can pop okay. back.
All right. So, you guys see that? All right. So, you see over here at the top right, we have the Rainbow Broadband connection, and the bottom, top left, we have the internet via Net Access Corp, which is, via DSL. And what we did was we routed all of the wireless access out the Rainbow Broadband because we figured that would be the bulk of the majority of our users would be wireless users. And the minority of our users would be, wired, the public terminal cluster, or if you needed an Ethernet jack, we figured that would be a lot less traffic. So we sent that out to DSL because we wanted to make sure that we used both, both pipes so nothing was wasted. And so that's why we had to do the policy routing, is because we had a separate, /22 subnet, which is four Class Cs. That was for the wireless. And we had a /24, which is basically a single Class C, for the wired connection. And that's where the policy routing came into play, is that if you were on one specific connection, we wanted to route you out one path, and you were on a different connection, we wanted to route you out the other path. So it's great in concept. I mean, I do it at home, where I send all my web stuff out my cable modem and my regular SSH and send mail and all that other stuff goes out my DSL. So it's good in concept, but in the implementation of this just was a nightmare. It probably took us a good 3 hours to get that part actually working properly.
Of course, we also started at 5 a.m. and that probably didn't accelerate our mental processes.
Hey, real quick, sorry guys. If there's somebody else who might have a laptop with wireless and SSH on it that I could borrow for a few minutes, you got quite a crowd here. There's no Wi-Fi working in here? Do you have network on yours? Is there any network in here at all somebody knows about? There's Wi-Fi over there. If anybody has the ability to get online, even through a cell network, it'll greatly improve the quality of the presentation.
Pick one. Right or left.
Okay, there we go. Let's go for that one. See, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
All right. So this is the network topology. You see over here on the right-hand side, on the left-hand side is the second floor. That's where the main router was. On the 18th floor is where we have a switch that connects to the APs and also connects to the Rainbow Broadband stuff. Those dishes are actually on the roof, and we have an Ethernet going to the switch, and it actually routes over to a switch at four times. That radio antenna, you can actually see behind that. When you're done with the talk, you can see the radio antenna. That's the biggest radio antenna. You look outside that window, that's where our internet is going. And that's at four times square. So there's a switch there that has a fiber connection down to 60 Hudson Street, which is one of the telco hotels. And that's where we connect to our ISP, which is Net Access Corporation. And that's basically what our network topology looks like. I'm going to go back to the wireless, which I skipped over, and let Dragon talk for a few minutes.
The wireless this year. 2 years ago, we used some custom-built hardware, which was basically Primestar satellite cabling boxes with a small motherboard shoved in them and a couple of fans wedged in there and a lot of duct tape and hot melt glue and a prayer. This year, we actually used Aruba AP70 APs. They donated 20 of them to do the wireless here. They're 200 and some odd megahertz MIPS boxes with dual AVG radios with power over Ethernet. Made it much easier to set things up. The management code this year was a plugin for the new version of Kismet, which just lets you manage the radios over the standard protocol, so I didn't have to write nearly as much software. We targeted 3 BG channels and 3 A channels per area. 11A is good. Hopefully people used it. It seemed like we got a fair amount of usage on it. 11G will degrade itself to 11B mode the instant someone with a B-only radio connects to it, so that was pretty much guaranteed to be 11 megabit only. We saw some DOS attacks against the network, but it wasn't as severe as it was 2 years ago, so in general, we held up a bit better. Every year, we tweak where we put the APs a little bit. This year was mostly pretty good until apparently right now, but I'm up here, so I don't know what's going on. And that was about it for the wireless access.
Do you have anything you want to talk about? Do you want me to come back to you?
Yeah, I got about 30 minutes to talk, so go
ahead. So let's see if there's anything else about the network. I don't think that we pretty much covered how the topology looked. All right, so we guess we can talk about should we talk about the problems now, or do you want to talk?
Your choice. I'm just going to go on a big history about the PTC.
Okay. All right, I'll let PTC go last. So some of the problems that we had was the fiber spool ran out, as we said. Now here's where I have to own up. So we had this great 90 megabit connection to the internet, and when we were troubleshooting the problem, we saw that one of the link lights on the switch was amber, meaning it was 10 megabit. And also we noticed that no matter what we did on the wireless, we couldn't down, our MRTG graphs were showing that it was only about 10 megabit. And I guess that didn't come into my mind. But when I did troubleshoot, I traced it, and I thought it was going to one of the APs. Turned out that this bad patch was what was routing our wireless internet access. So we could only get about 10 megabits per second. And not only that, but when we couldn't even max out for a single session. For some reason, whenever you created a session, it was about... about 50K per second. So all the signs pointed to the ISP that we thought that they were, the ISP being NAC, we thought they were doing some sort of traffic shaping. Maybe they gave us IP addresses from some other customer at some point that was shaped. So I have to apologize to Net Access Corporation and to Rainbow that this bad patch prevented us from fully utilizing the network. But right now, if you get wireless access, we were downloading at over 700K per second, which is probably the fastest we've ever downloaded here at a Hope conference. So other problems, policy routing in Linux was just extremely complicated. Apparently, let me go back to the network map. So if you see over here, so for the on this list, we have the wired access, the wireless access, and the external. And those are the wireless and was one subnet, and the wired and the external were on the same /24, but we carved it up, we subnetted it further. And for each of these subnets, when you're doing policy routing, you have to, basically nail down a route for every single one of these. So it's not like, at least on BSD, what I've done in the past was just said, if it's going from one IP address, route it to this IP, to this gateway. If it's going from a different IP address, route it to this other gateway. And that's really literally three lines of IPF is what you could use to get policy routing in NetBSD. Here, I think the policy route was about 12 lines, and it took us about a couple hours to get that working. So
basically, we had to split the routing table into two different tables, one for each side, and we forgot to add all of the other interface routes back into it. So we shot ourselves in the foot.
Yep. And the other way we shot ourselves in the foot is that once we fixed the Rainbow Broadband problem, the router could barely keep up. It was falling over itself. So next time, if we do get the super fast wireless broadband, we will have to get a super fast, good Cisco router to actually handle proper routing.
Yeah, the router actually fell over from PCI interrupts. At one point, we broke 100,000 interrupts a second, and it didn't like it.
So some of the other problems, again, volunteers disappearing. We had a lot of people come up to us in the beginning and say, we want to be network volunteers. And this was before we even had a network, so we didn't, or even had a place to set up a network. So we didn't need them right then. And I think half of those people joined the security team, which was, which happens all the time. And but the people that we did have, that did express interest in doing exclusively the NOC. I don't think we actually got anybody from the emailed the volunteer list and said that they wanted to volunteer. I don't think we actually got any of the. I'm sorry, we got one person. This guy named Andrew from Cisco, and we're using one of his routers as part of the core network. But that was about it. So the NOC was pretty much staffed by the core network team, the AV team, and some other project. We were trying to get some webcams up to stream to the internet, but that didn't really pan out. But while they were setting up, they were pretty much manning the NOC. So we barely had just enough coverage to make sure that things don't walk away and whatever, or people don't tamper with the network. So I guess did I write some lessons? So some of the lessons over this experience was, which I think I probably said this at the last Hope, was maybe we should actually review what we talked about, the problems that we had from the last Hope. We didn't, I don't think, I definitely didn't do any of that. We should also try to do, again, the planning, which I didn't really get a chance to do much of. I could have been better at providing the specific details of the network to the people who wanted to use stuff on the network. But more specifically, you know, even then, I really didn't get any details of what people needed from the network until the day the network was set up, or the day before the network was set up. Everybody's heard the term, the phrase, measure twice, cut once. That's pretty important, especially when you're running fiber. 450 feet of fiber did not make it from the 18th floor to the second floor. And we actually had to use a coupler, like I mentioned before. Again, coordinating specific times with volunteers. When we get some volunteers, we need to make sure that they're going to be where they are. Now, we realize that people want to see the conference, but when you promise that you're going to help out the NOC and then you disappear, that makes keeping the network up and running a little bit difficult. And the last thing was making a separate project NOC where, if people wanted to set up a Tor router or webcams or whatever, to keep that stuff out of the NOC because, people tripping over the cables can, take down the network and, having to chase people away while we're, trying to fix a problem is, gets a little frustrating and time-consuming and, delays getting fixing problems. So we definitely need to separate out stuff from the NOC. And I think that's about it for my part of it. So is there anything else you want to talk about before I go to
Doug?
Nope,
turn it over to Doug.
All right, we'll turn it over to Doug.
All right, we got a video on this, a video on that.
What do you want to do?
Is there a net on that?
I will check.
Okay, we'll see if we can get some net going on here because mine's somewhat dependent on net. So what I'm supposed to talk about is the public terminal cluster, if you guys have missed this. This is a small collection smattering, really, of terminals of various types downstairs, just to the left of the escalators you get off going up. This is my sixth hope, I guess, to be involved in some manner with something like this. The very first hope, which was here in this hotel, there was an official terminal service put on by the con management, which I was not a part of, but we had our own little party going on because they allowed anyone to set up what they wanted, and so I brought a few people and a few terminals of various types, but after that, we were able to get on ourselves at hope.con.com, you can get to. And so I've prepared a few documents from the earlier times. So some people feel that the public terminal cluster should provide a service, and that service is access to the internet. Well, that, of course, is just plain stupid because this is a hacker conference. People, if they want to get online, bring your laptops. So the rendition that I've taken it to, has been more or less to do something cool.
Do you want that to see it?
Oh, yeah. Can I see it? I didn't think it. Can you get rid of that? Those tabs, too? So we've been trying to do something cool. Last year, actually, there are two of us who have been the main instigators, myself, and then I'm Doug, and then Mike with a Y, M-Y-K-E. Who was pretty much in charge of everything last year, and he was much more on the side of let's try and provide a service. His system, we tried to do something a little odd. So last year he focused mainly on providing Linux access through Linux boxes. I think his core machine was a 300 megahertz Pentium Pro, Pentium 2, with 64/128 megs of RAM, CD drive, 4 gigs of disk, that sort of thing. Worked very well. So the year before, we had two things. He had his Linux thing, then I had started the first year with, that was my first year, with diskless terminals. We used NCD, what they called NCD Explorer XA. These are little black boxes, a little smaller than a laptop, that have PS2 output, VGA output, and network input output, and have no disk in them, just a bunch of RAM, and they require some sort of machine to boot off of to get their firmware and then to run. And that was very cool. The thing that was probably cool last year was the existence of Token Ring. The entire network was not Ethernet. It was Token Ring. It was Twisted Pair Token Ring. And that made it particularly interesting for people. We always have this problem plugging their own laptops into the switches and trying to get around stuff. Well, it was pretty fun watching them plug in and trying to figure out how to get online through the Token Ring router. Most people didn't know what Token Ring was, so we got our little private laughs off of that. We had a similar thing for this year. Since the previous year, our biggest problem with providing this, we'd set out switches on the tables, We had 50, the 1 year, 2 years, two times ago, we had about 100 terminals, 50 of each type, and it was a massive mess, my God. But people would plug their own stuff into the switches, and pretty often those people would assign the router address to their own laptop, pretend that they're, you know, the main router gateway for everything, and you could guess what happens then. All sorts of conflict, people getting upset, and us saying, God, you're a loser. It was really annoying. So last year, that was dealt with by having Token Ring on the network. Since I was coming on site this year, and we didn't really have Token Ring as an option for the terminals that I wanted to use, this year we did something a little different. We did use Ethernet. I guess if we wanted to, we could have had it somewhat secure, you know, assign a MAC address per port, but somebody would have gotten around that. Instead, this year, we decided not to use TCP/IP as our network protocol, but instead chose DECnet to use as our network protocol. So people who would plug into our network and think of themselves very cool, you know, I'm plugging this network and assigning myself the gateway address, and they'd sit there and nothing would happen because we weren't using TCP/IP. So we got around that using DECnet this year, which was a lot of fun. And also, to provide extra challenge to those who are interested in it, instead of using Linux as our operating system, or using Windows, or using BSD, or Unix, period, we chose to use VMS as the operating system for our central terminals, for our central mainframe. So all of our terminals ran and gave you a VMS, what they call a DCL session, so the equivalent to the terminal. And we saw several people try to hack root on this. People who are familiar with VMS know there's no actual named account, or account named root. It's system, by the way. We could have had a whole session on how not to hack root on a VMS box just by watching these guys try this. It was a lot of fun. But, you know, we did provide web service, and we provided SSH and telnet access, so all the services you needed. If you typed that, it would have worked. Even if you type in capitals, you know, that's the cool thing about VMS, case insensitivity. A lot of these new kids have forgot about that when you used to be able to type caps and get away with it. So some of the things we have here, Mike Holling is the guy who has done a lot of this before, and he's done some excellent stuff. What browser is this, by the way?
Firefox?
Okay, there's a way to increase the font size, right?
Yeah, Control+.
I know that. God's sakes. All right, so it's the left control. Okay, cool. So I don't know if you guys can see this or not. There we go. I'll clip it to myself. Too big? All right, that's visible. Oh, goodness. All right. Very good. My mouse is gone. So, yes. Okay, that's something's wrong.
Oh, one second.
Oh, F11. Try F11.
One second. Let me bring up IE.
All right. Anyway, this is from, I believe this is from 2 years ago, 2002. That was two times ago, right?
Oh, please.
Well, how do you get the font up then? Can you get the font increased?
Yeah.
It's not the same thing. Just to let you guys know, I've been using Firefox for about 6 years, I think, now. And last month, switched to Opera. Oh, really? Okay. It's not open source, is it? Is Opera open source? And you're plotting it? The hell. It is better than IE. Give you that. Anyway, Opera seems to have come back. I used to love Opera, and then didn't keep up to date, and now Firefox, and now Opera's back, and they're cool. This is visible to everyone, I hope. No problems. Let's see if I can find my the favorite part of this that I like. Vandalism and theft, always a problem. Oh, by the way, you guys, we'll have some stuff to give away downstairs, mostly monitors. Please don't take the terminals themselves. They're available at $400 a piece, but I can't give them away this year. They belong to someone else. Let's see, where the heck is it? Art points. Definitely the H2 takeover did score on art points big time. This is very important to us. More than providing a service, more than doing stuff, is sort of the art points we can get. The image of derelict youth in a semi-abandoned cyber techno ghetto is priceless. We didn't really shoot for that this year and didn't really make it, but some girl, not a day over 13, ducked down near one of the fringe tables, consumed something nasty looking from a bottle in a bag. Yeah, we didn't have much of that happen this year, but we're shooting for next time, little more things. This was the year we had 100 terminals, and it was way too much. So much stuff all over the place, endless catacombs of computers, just too much crap everywhere. Last year we settled on a count of 36. We did 36 again this year, and that's a pretty good number, so we don't get too nuts. We really didn't have as much usage this year as we have in past years. I think more laptops is what that's due to. I think maybe for next year we're going to try something else cool, art points. I would love suggestions on what we could try out as far as the... What is it?
BOS. Well, that's Unix, right? So I don't know if we do that. We thought about BOS. We thought about PIC. Anyone heard of PIC? Yeah, we thought about using PIC. Huh? Microcontrollers. Yeah, that's lame. We couldn't do that. I just want to go back to the... did you actually pull up the... I'll just do this. How about that? Okay. Yeah. Any good ideas? I'd love to hear. So this was our schedule that we had planned for originally. Oh, yeah. Since Mike wasn't able to make it, we christened this cluster the Michael L. Holling Memorial Public Terminal Cluster. And this was our original schedule. And luckily, we didn't really stick to that schedule this year, which I am very happy to report. But we did have a lot of fun. So, let's see. It's been six times. We've done all sorts of different technology. So I'm definitely going to push, since I'm the guy who's been financing this for the last six times, I'm going to push for more art, less service for the next time. I can show you some of the other things we had here. How do you get back? No gestures? Damn. What is it? You can see our mascot. This is actually the mascot from last time. This is an actual person we had here at the convention, and that's what it looked like if you stared at him long enough. I actually don't know if we got these. Hopefully. You can see things as they were a little more. This is, I guess, our sponsorship has changed a bit over the years, and I guess now we have Telerama as our sponsor, who does wireless internet in various places. All right, this is not going to be pleasant, so we might just give up on the pictures here.
Yeah. Forget the URLs or something later.
Yeah, hope.con.com. So that's my, not only is my anti-spam system and a cool way to create websites for places. Yeah, so that's pretty much what I had on the PTC. Are we having questions later?
Probably not, because we probably not going to be able to have questions because, we only had 45 minutes. So,
right, very glad to hear about that.
But I'm going to see if there's anything useful from or that looks good for our graphing that we were doing.
Yeah, we've had sort of sketchy volunteers over the last few years. If anybody wants to volunteer now for the one in 2 years, we could use you. Especially, we need a graphic designer big time. So if somebody's really good at graphic design and wants to help us out for the next session, all right, come on up after the thing. We need a graphic designer big time.
All right, so like I was saying before, we did get MRTG doing some graphing, and it's going to be a little bit skewed because for up until about an hour ago, we were pushing about 10 megabit, and so that's all that. This is throughout the conference, we had about 10 megabit, and then we fixed the problem, and that's this. So the graphs don't look that good, but it did show that we did pretty much come close to fully utilizing our bandwidth for, the pleasure of Pyro, who got us the internet connection. And let's see what our DSL looked like. And we have pretty much, I don't know, how they, that can't be right. How do we put out 72 megabit over our DSL? That doesn't sound right. Actually, I think that was when that's not actually accurate. I think I'm graphing the wrong link on that one. That one is the link to our internal network, and it's mislabeled. Let me see if... I think we were actually trying to push out that much bandwidth, and it couldn't. I don't know why that looks like that. But for the pretty much until that spike that hit 72 megabit, we were averaging about 3 megabit a second. So, yeah, great graphs. I guess maybe what I'll do is I'll clean up the RRD files and just take it up until about 4 p.m. when maybe maybe it'll look a little bit better.
I do have one question for the crowd. Actually, one of the things we had planned for this year and didn't end up pulling off. We're VGA, instead of monitors, VGA goggles. So we're thinking about that for next year. Let's show of hands, who would use the VGA goggles? Who would attract them to, VGA goggles would attract you to the public terminal cluster to use it? That'd be cool. Would you worry about who might have used the goggles beforehand? Anything like that? Alcohol wipes. Okay, excellent idea. Guys are doing great already. So VGA goggles will be one of the things on deck for next time.
And we have one more thing, some eye candy. Let's view this as a slideshow and see how it comes up. All right, so Dragon.
The plan had been to get these set up on projectors, but due to some iOS switch version problems and the router already being tanked, we we couldn't get the span ports going, and I didn't want to run TCP dump on a router that was barely working to begin with. But this shows our IP space, the internet IP space, and the port. Right before we took the screenshot, you can see someone port scanned the entire con space, probably on port 80. And then we also mapped all the connections coming in and out and what city they went to.
So next time, I'll, with more planning, which I wasn't able to do, I'll try to get somebody specifically dedicated to doing the visual, getting the visualization set up, because this is a lot of great work. But unfortunately, you know, nobody got to see it until now. And if you could actually barely, I don't know if you guys could see it well enough, but yeah, next time we'll try to get that done better.
It's hard to do. I know the guy who does this. No, is there any
All right. Do you want to say something else?
Oh yeah, I know the guy. This was made by Stephen. Dude who works at one of the national laboratories. Oh, God,
actually, it's a copy of his. He never released
it. It's a copy of his? Released it, really?
He never released it. The program was called The Spinning Cube of Potential Doom, and he...
What's his name again? Cube of Doom. Okay.
Yeah, Spinning Cube of Potential Doom. But it was written by... what's his name? Who works for the...
Stephen...
Someone who, his name, you can't remember. Anyway, it was written... he works for the government, and he never released the code, so I just re-implemented it. It's about 500 lines of C.
I had one other thing. So my lieutenant this year is a guy named Sparks. Hey, Sparks, are you there?
Yes.
I'm going to put you on the microphone here. About 300 people listening to you. Do you want to say anything else about the public terminal cluster? We just gave a small presentation on how it was.
No.
Something? Have you got anything to report? Sparks?
Can you hear me now?
Smart guy. So you must have something to say about the cluster, how it's working, and what you think of it, how much fun it was to set it up.
It was fun to work on it and you know, try to figure out what was going on with it and why it wasn't working.
I don't think there's any point when it wasn't working, right?
Well, the terminals themselves weren't working. Wait.
Yeah, we're having some reception problems with Mike, so we'll talk to him later.
So I'll be putting up the router configs, the Visio diagram, all that other stuff on my webpage. If you can remember, it'll probably be like, if I think we have it from last conference, like that's the Visio from the last conference. So I'll put it up in the, you know, similar directory. And... oh yeah, there's the Knox staff. That was right before we tore down, and that's the team from last conference. A lot of the same people were there, like El Cruz and Al Porkchop, and I don't know where you guys are. Anyway, look, there's Hitman. So last year he was pretty helpful. So let's see what else, and I'll just put the same documents up on my website. If anybody's actually interested in finding that stuff, I'll probably post the URL to the wiki so you can get access to the, you know, configs and whatever. And I think that's about it for me. Anything else?
Nope, nothing here.
And we're just about out of time. So if you have any questions, you can email us. It's pretty easy to find us. So or you can just, you know, I don't think we'll have time to talk tonight because we have to tear down everything now. So, but that's about it. Thanks for your time.